From Relay, this is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of television. This is episode number 97, recorded June the 16th, 2025. I am your master of ceremonies, Jason Snell. We're going to be joined by Joe Dalian of Vulture in a minute. But before I do that, I wanted to give all of you listeners an update about what's going on here. We had Julia on a few weeks ago. Really great to have her back talking about, well, she couldn't talk about her time working for Disney, but talking about how she was happy to be blogging again and writing again, and we're doing stuff for Puck. And when we recorded that, we were both under the impression, not to tell tales out of school here, but, you know, she asked Puck if it was okay for her to do Downstream, and they said, sure. Which was great. And so we did an episode and all of that. A couple weeks ago, we were preparing to record an episode, and she got the word from Puck that they really, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but I think they want to use her now that she's full-time at Puck, which she never was before. It was a part-time job for her. Now she's full-time there, and they want to use her on their podcast, which I think is completely fair. But as a result, she can't be on this podcast. So it's a bummer. I was really excited to have her back. I guess it was just a one shot. Maybe one day we'll be able to have her on as a guest again. But I think for now, if you want to listen to Julia, you should check out her work at Puck. And she's on a bunch of their podcasts there on a regular basis. So going forward, I'm shifting the gears right back to the gears I shifted when she left to go to Disney, which is I'm going to have a bunch of guests on. Joe Dalian from New York Magazine and Vulture. So knowledgeable. I mean, he knows this stuff cold, so we're going to talk to him again today. I liked having Will Carroll on, who brings that interesting sports industry perspective, including all the people who gave us feedback about him talking about just wild things involving gambling. I'm not a big gambling fan either, honestly, but like you see when he talks about it, just how obsessed so many people in the sports industry are about gambling, because that's where the money is right now. So I love talking to Will about sports. And he was, you know, if you don't know, like one of the original people who did Baseball Prospectus back in the day, which is hugely influential. So it's great to talk to Will. And I've had a bunch of other interesting people on here and there. I'll try to do some of that too. So anyway, I appreciate you sticking with the show. I am so sorry to tell you that it sounds like Julia is just not going to be able to participate going forward, even though we had all hoped, including Julia, that she could. She's super bummed out about it too. But at the same time, I totally understand. If I was the person running Puck, I would want all of Julia's brain on my podcast at Puck too. So I totally get it. Anyway, that's an update from me. Now we're going to go on with the show. So joining me now, Joe Dalian of Vulture. Joe, welcome back to Downstream. Good to have you.
Jason, it is good as always to be here, sir.
Yes, it's heating up there in Las Vegas. I hear they're going to have a groundbreaking for that A's stadium they're never going to build later this week. So that'll be fake.
Somebody is just a little bit bitter. But yes, I can't say I'm in favor of this stupid boondoggle.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if it happens. I'm not actually an A's fan. I'm a Giants fan. But like I know enough about the owner of the Oakland A's, the now Sacramento A's, soon to be Las Vegas A's, to be skeptical of any project that he does actually succeeding.
It says everything about the stupidity of Nevada governance that we passed massive tax breaks to go to this stadium that will present minimal jobs, and yet we failed for the second legislative session in a row and 20 years opposite the rest of the country to pass incentives for Hollywood production. So once again, despite the fact that people in Hollywood are basically begging, and look, you can make a strong case that studios production does not need incentives, it's a waste of taxpayer money, and certainly there's a strong case to be made that the benefits are not nearly as strong as the entertainment industry would like to suggest. But Vegas needs to diversify its economy, and my gosh, no better way than to try to be Hollywood East, just the closest version of Hollywood East possible. And yet once again they didn't. So yeah.
Priorities. I wanted to start our episode talking about the continuing adventures of David Zaslav. Just for those who don't remember, he ran a bunch of cable channels. That was Discovery. But there was a whole plan that I guess AT&T put into place where they spun off Warner Brothers and merged it with Discovery. And David Zaslav ended up in charge of the whole thing. And over the years, he's, you know, made a lot of money, tens of millions of dollars every year in salary while doing things like killing movie projects of movies that were already shot and in the can and all of these other things that have earned him the kind of ire of people in the creative community, all saying, well, it's all going to work out financially. But it didn't really, and it didn't make sense. And it feels like the, although the show is not over, I feel like one act in the story is now over with his announcement that they're going to, yes, split Warner Brothers Discovery back out into two companies, one of which will be the traditional studios as well as the Max streaming brand, and the other of which will be all of those cable channels, but now also including TBS and TNT and the sports rights going over there. And why would you do this? The same reason Comcast did it. You've got one set of assets that are going to go down in value and become unprofitable eventually, but throw off a lot of revenue in the meantime and could be bled to death. And then you've got a growth engine, which is your studios and streaming. So Zaz, who was brought in, it's amazing. He gets swept in with the cable company. And then after a few years, he allows the cable tide to go back out and he remains a studio head instead. Ah, amazing how that works. So I don't know. What do you, I mean, I've obviously been injecting my opinion in here as I describe this. What do you,
think?
What do you think? What do you think about all of this? This is SpinCo 2, the next spin.
You know, first of all, let me say that I am not David Zaslav defender by any means. There's plenty to criticize about the man. But to quote the philosopher Joel, he didn't start the fire. It was always burning since the world's been turning. You know, the Warner Brothers Discovery merger is just the latest of all sorts of public mashups of companies over the last 20, 30 years that have gone awry. And, you know, I remind you of the fact that at one point CBS and Westinghouse and Viacom were separate companies, and then they were together, then they were separate, and now they're together, and now they're going to merge with someone else. You know, Time Warner and AOL. So there's a big history of this sort of happening. And AT&T sort of was the original sin of this latest variation that's related to the HBO Max and streaming. They're the ones who messed up mightily with their original acquisition. And so Zaslav was coming in as a way to he took advantage of AT&T's weakness and saw an opportunity for himself. And there was and remains a lot of logic to these companies being together. And I will say this, the companies are splitting up, but they will now be cousins as opposed to siblings, right? So there will still be sort of some tangential sort of connection between them, but they will be separate companies in the same way that, you know, CBS and Paramount/Viacom split up years ago before they rejoined forces. I guess so is what I would say to this whole merger. I was off. I sort of am angry at all of these legacy companies who have engaged in so much brand destruction of their cable and linear bundles and properties over the last 5 years in their relentless pursuit of Netflix. Everyone in that world has done it. Disney's done it. Paramount has done it. NBC Universal and Comcast have done it. No one has sort of, and arguably, Paramount and CBS have destroyed their cable brands even more.
Yeah.
The CBS broadcast brand remains strong, but the cable brand, there is none of those cable networks have a brand. It's been replaced by the Yellowstone brand, which sort of lives beyond Paramount cable network, and it's just there. But the Showtime as a network as a brand means nothing anymore. It isn't even technically a separate brand anymore. It's Showtime, Paramount Plus with Showtime is the official title of that service. So Zaslav has done a lot of that. I am not surprised by any of this. I don't think the average consumer is going to see much difference, honestly. We've already seen over the last year or so a lot of Discovery titles were taken off HBO Max. Mm-hmm. Off Max, soon to be HBO Max, once in future. And more probably will follow, but I wouldn't be surprised if some of the biggest ones continue to find a way on. CNN on Max has never really sort of, CNN on Max started out as being sort of a lot of the live feed being on CNN on Max, but now it's just stuff that's sort of the less primetime stuff. So it's not even really a good substitute for CNN anymore. And The one thing that was sort of the tell in all this, I think, was a few years ago when, after originally saying they were going to shut down Discovery Plus, they kept Discovery Plus up and running.
Yeah.
Because very quickly they realized, you know what? There are plenty of people who just want sort of reality show content, and they don't want to pay the premium of $17 a month. And so I now think that those linear assets, that sort of more sort of the cable stuff, can sort of find its own way. And I think it'll do okay. It probably will get sold or bundled in with someone else as everyone sort of potentially gets more scale, assuming that the current regime allows these sort of mergers to happen. But at the end of the day, you know, it just, it's the real story is just a lot of brand destruction. There's a thoughtful and careful way to sort of try to take on the streaming era. And then there's what these companies did. Not saying it was ever going to be easy, Jason, because let's face it, Netflix and Amazon, and to a lesser degree, Apple, came into this space with billions of dollars and said, we are going to destroy you. That's really, they didn't say it in as many words. And they said, originally said, oh, there's plenty of room and whatever. Their whole point has been, how do we capture as much market share as possible? How do we make linear as weak as possible? Because we don't have those assets there. How do we retrain how the very way that people watch television? So they came in there doing everything they could to destroy it. What companies like Paramount Global and Warner Brothers Discovery, whatever, Comcast did was, let's hurry up the process. Let's make it as easy as possible. Let's first license our content to these companies, and then let's destroy these brands so that, you know what, there's really no reason to stay with cable. Rather than finding a way to sort of make cable cheaper and more affordable, keep more people in that ecosystem and sort of have them sort of live side by side, they sort of starve them. And so they sped up cord cutting and realized that that they're not as equipped to compete with the tech companies. And that's what happened. And I think they did it the wrong way. Does any of that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm sort of on a rant there. I just feel like they needed to make change. It's easy to say, well, oh, they just destroyed these companies. People will say, well, Zaslav destroyed this company. And look at all these companies that they did. They did do a lot of brand destruction, absolutely, but they had enemies who were there pushing it. I think they could have fought back more effectively, and they could have slowed this process down and, you know, sort of made it harder for these companies to do what they've done, but they instead didn't. They because they're so focused on short-term profits and short-term stock price more than anything else, that they chose that as opposed to go slow, figure it out. And,
it's a classic story. It's a classic business story of people entrenched in one area, not being able to think too far ahead because their current success is designed, around them not thinking that far ahead. And so you get these executives selling content to Netflix was good because it generated revenue, and they were being judged based on the revenue they were generated and probably being paid based on the revenue they were generating. But if you look at it from the long term, you're creating your replacement. You're allowing them to build your replacement. But if you have that, there's a book, this is a little bit of a tangent, but I just read a very good book called Apple in China that is about a similar kind of situation, which is Apple made a series of logical, expedient business decisions to improve the way that they could manufacture their products. But every step of the way, as they did that, they were teaching and building and investing in an entire Chinese infrastructure to build products that has made it impossible for Apple to extract itself from China. But you're also educating China. I mean, it has very much the similar vibes, which is you made a series of smart business decisions in the moment that have led to basically the creation of your replacement, the build that you helped build your replacement. And with Netflix especially, I feel like that's absolutely what they did. And some of them figured it out eventually, but like it is rough. And then you bring in the other technology companies who, like Amazon and Apple, who do not need to play by the same rules. And it's going to be interesting to see where this ends up, though. Like, I know a lot of people have speculated about the Warner Brothers studio and streaming service, since it technically doesn't have any any broadcast component to it, or, you know, or any legacy, you know, cable channels or anything that, that a tech company might want to buy it. But I've also seen a lot of really strong arguments that say, but why would they? So I think there's some dreams about like continued Right. financial shenanigans in terms of various transactions that might solve a lot of this. And there's a real question about if any of those transactions will actually make sense or happen.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of that going on. Mm-hmm. And I don't, you know, people saying, well, about Apple, I guess if, you know, to be associated with the studio, certainly Apple TV Plus would immediately, it's sort of built a lane of being sort of an HBO sort of thing, but, and they could just say, well, you know what? Great. And I mean, if I ran Apple TV and I sort of saw this coming, I would just feel like, what the heck have I spent the last 7 years doing, you know, building exactly. an established business. Yeah. And, you know, but you know, what if suddenly, you know, HBO came free with your iPod and it just had slightly more content. I mean, maybe that's worth it.
Somebody said, you know, and I think it's not a bad point, which is you could have also just bought Warner Brothers Discovery and sold off the cable brands anyway.
Sure.
Right? You didn't
exactly.
need to wait for this moment to strike. I think there's a lot of wish casting about
yeah.
billions of dollars from Silicon Valley solving problems in Hollywood that are probably like, again, you're right. They went and hired Zach and Jamie from Sony and said, build us a streaming service. And they have, over the last few years, built a pretty good streaming service. And so to say, oh, well, we're just going to buy HBO, like, you could do that. But other than the intellectual property, like, I don't, do you need to do that?
No, you don't. Because you get into all sorts of other businesses and studios. And
do they
want to be in the business of making shows for all these other networks, which Warner Brothers does?
Yeah,
it doesn't make any,
Apple.
It wouldn't make any sense to me.
No.
But then again, you know, Apple is not immune from making bad decisions, as you know, much better than I.
It is true. But this seems, they have a very strong, what's called the not invented here syndrome. Apple kind of wants to make its own things. And so buying, they do occasionally buy big companies, like Beats they bought, for example, but like generally they don't, because it's a bad fit culturally and because Apple likes to make things themselves. And they built Apple TV Plus, and say what you will about it, from a quality standpoint, they kind of nailed it, and they're still figuring out some other aspects of it. I'm not sure that this would make any sense.
And it doesn't get written enough because Apple refuses to sort of, it's tough because they never make their executives available for comment, except Eddie once in a while will say something
limited,
about Apple TV.
Yeah.
So they don't really do it. But the thing is, talking about, you know, how all the other, these linear companies sort of rushed in like lemmings to chase after Netflix, Apple TV Plus famously did not. They literally lived up to the Apple ethos of think different. They built a streaming service that was originals only without spending money on library content. And do you remember all the stories you probably talked about on one of your podcasts at some point? People complaining. It's like, yeah, but you can't, you know, there's not enough here. There's not enough to watch. There's a huge library now in Apple TV Plus, and it feels premium. It feels premium in a way that other streamers don't. And you know exactly, and there's enough cadence of content that I think a lot of people feel they get a lot. It's not for everybody, and it's true. If they ever want to be for everyone, it's not going to make sense because you get less. But you know, and that's the one area where maybe you could see it make content suddenly if you bought. But to me, if you're going to buy a studio, buy one that would have made MGM would have made more sense, or Paramount even actually could make some sense. But that's not going away. Like, because you know, if they wanted to license movies, they could have licensed movies already. I don't feel there's a need to do that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it really comes down to if a big tech company has their eyes on some intellectual property, but like, you're not just buying the intellectual property, you're also buying all this other stuff. Like, you can get DC, you can get Superman and Batman. If you want them, you could get them, but you're not just buying Superman. You're buying a lot of baggage that goes along with Superman. So, or for Paramount, you can get Star Trek, you can get Beavis and Butthead, you can get South Park, but like, you get a lot more with that. And do you really want the more?
Right. I still think the more likely option, as has been talked about, is some sort of combination between the streaming service of that independent of Max with either Comcast and Peacock or Paramount Plus, you know,
I agree.
Which of course would also be, can you imagine if suddenly Cindy Holland from Netflix is apparently going to go over running the new Paramount Plus, and suddenly at one point they merge with Warner Brothers Discovery, and sort of like, okay, is she suddenly running HBO now? How does that work?
Do you merge the streamers, but not the studios? Because that would probably be regulatory problems. But you could have a joint venture. You know, it's bringing back Hulu, basically. A joint venture of like a single streaming service that has all the content in it, too. I don't know. I mean, there's lots of games being played. But there's also the question, you mentioned it, regulatory environment here. A lot of the stuff requires government approval. And we are in an era now where the government, you know, the people in the government are essentially standing around with their hands out asking to be paid or having lawsuits that are surely losers to be settled in their favor in order to approve things. And so who knows how any of this is going to go. Actually, this is a good segue into my next topic, which is the endless Paramount sales story, because
or the never-ending story.
Right. Because there's the 60 Minutes lawsuit that's still out there, which, again, all the legal experts will say there's no way that Donald Trump will win that lawsuit, except what the Sherry Redstone wants to do is pay him off so that he'll tell the FCC to approve the merger, or the FTC to approve the merger. And or is it the FCC? I guess it's both of them have a stake in this because it's broadcast. And anyway, the government has ways of saying no here, and that's the problem. So there are a lot of theories about this. There's a question, like, Larry Ellison loaned Sherry Redstone money as kind of like a bridge loan before the sale closed. There's this walk away provision that they have that has been extended, but it can't go on indefinitely. There's some real interesting scenarios out there if this falls through. And the funny thing is, it doesn't seem like anybody wants it to fall through. It's more like a real question about do you have to pay off Donald Trump personally or the administration in some way in order to gain approval? And of course, everybody at CBS News and 60 Minutes is sort of outraged by this idea because it is, you know, goes against a lot of journalistic principles. But at the same time, if you're a millionaire who is trying to unload your family business, would you not just say, sure, we'll settle, just please approve my deal? It's a mess. It's a really ugly mess. And it seems like, based on the speculation that I've read the last few weeks, it could get weirder and uglier going forward rather than being resolved, which is not great for Paramount.
Yeah. I don't pretend to know what will happen in this situation. No, I think it would be foolish to say.
I don't know if anybody does.
Yeah. I will say, I do think this is not a clear decision for a billionaire. It maybe is for people who want to defend billionaires and the current thinking of Sherry Redstone, but billionaires haven't always been so craven, right? You know, the fact is, you know, it's not as if, you know, that there are other ways, there are other people who could buy the company, and there are, you know, you can make noise. And I maybe Sherry Redstone, is she really broke, or then she can, you know, that's her personal fortune. You know, she's now got cancer. The thing is, this is going to affect her legacy. And I do think at some point, I understood, even if I disagreed with Disney's decision to settle the This Week lawsuit, because even though Disney didn't have anything specifically pending, it would have opened them up to discovery. And it wasn't a clear cut case. It was, but at least they're, you know, you could argue that they would have to issue some sort of apology, that maybe the phrasing, and for those of you who don't know, it's because George Stephanopoulos said that Trump was convicted of rape. In fact, technically, he was convicted of criminal assault. It really is a distinction without a difference in sort of in the real scheme of the words, sense of the literal, the actual sense of things. It's really the same thing. But you could at least make an argument that, okay, the jury might have actually I don't think it would be clear. Open and shut. In the case of the 60 Minutes, it absolutely is. It's like they didn't do anything wrong. And, you know, it's insane that she's thinking of settling this lawsuit. And yet this is where we are. And I sort of get my mind gets jumbled because I still can't process this is where we are in America. I still can't process, you know, that this sort of lawsuit, which is simply about, I don't like how you edited an interview. It had nothing even to do with something I said. It's how something my opponent said, that's somehow illegal. Like, Fox News exists in a world where they're constantly editing. Like, you know, I wish that a whole bunch of politicians would start, you know, suing Fox News and claiming you did X, Y, or Z, or you helped Trump in this way, and that's unfair because Kamala Harris would absolutely have a lawsuit if that were actually a thing, but it's not because there's freedom of the press in this country. I don't know what's going to happen. I should focus on the topic here, which is what's going to happen with Paramount. So I apologize to listeners.
But it's a very unsettled environment right now where there's a lot, and lacking certainty is a thing that lots of groups, including investors, don't like. The lack of certainty about what policy is going to be, because the policy seems to change on a whim. Because it does. It does change on a whim. That's the truth of it.
Yeah. And what's so wrong with the idea of, especially with Comcast and Spinco happening and what's happening in Warner Bros. Discovery, screw this deal, and Sherry, basically they get rid of this and they do some sort of alliance. It would make much more sense and wouldn't require government approval if you simply got to a point where Peacock and Paramount Plus merge, or Paramount Plus and Max merge. I mean, then you would have actually so much more, and you would have one thing, and that to me would make a lot more sense, except it wouldn't make Sherry as rich, I guess. But the company would be healthier, and it's not as if the company is, it's not as if, I don't think that Paramount is some distressed asset. I don't think it's nearly as distressed as some other companies. I mean, it doesn't have as much debt as Warner Brothers. It has debt, obviously, but it's, I think CBS is in great shape. The cable business is not the same, but it's still making money. I don't know. I don't think it's like it's do or die for this merger. And if she had any sort of honor, she would walk away, and maybe she still will, but it's probably not what's going to happen. Be surprised, and I still wouldn't be surprised it's gone down this road. I have a feeling that this is going to be settled.
I think the Ellisons are going to get what they want.
I think Trump is going to get,
and I think Trump is going to get what he wants. And the fact is, I think Sherry Redstone and Larry Ellison and his son all are going to give Trump what he wants. And I mean, the Ellisons are big Trump boosters too. So I think in the end, a deal will be made. And if there's anything Donald Trump loves, it's making a deal. So I'm sure, I think it will happen. And the details are kind of the greater question of, are there going to be things that make, people at CBS uncomfortable, make Sherry Redstone uncomfortable? We'll see that. But it feels to me like this will get resolved eventually.
I believe Trump Wireless is now going to be the official wireless of CBS Mornings.
Sure. Sounds good.
So, yeah.
This episode of Downstream is brought to you by Factor. Summer's finally here. That means more sun, more light, more time to do all those things that make summer so special. And what you probably don't want to be doing is spending hours inside cooking. I hate getting the kitchen hot, the oven, in the summer, I don't want to do it. This is where Factor comes in. Factor has chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals that can be ready in just 2 minutes, which takes the hassle out of eating well. Factor meals arrive fresh and ready to eat, perfect for any active lifestyle over summer and beyond. They have 45 weekly menu options. I have seen them. There's so many. The variety is amazing. You can pick gourmet meals that fit your summer gains and goals. Choose from options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto, and more. Factor can power your day sun up to sundown. They offer nutritious breakfasts, on-the-go lunches, premium dinners, and guilt-free snacks and desserts. Factor has your whole day covered. Enjoy more this summer. Get Factor if you want all the flavor and none of the fuss. Keep that kitchen cool. I get food from Factor for my mom, because my mom wasn't really cooking for herself, didn't like it, didn't want to do it, and we were worried about her losing weight. And so now we send her Factor meals, and I get to pick them, and I'm learning. She gives me feedback. She's like, I don't like those big pastas. I'm like, okay, tube pastas then. Fair, it sounds okay. But she likes the salmon, and so I just get as much of the salmon as we can get, along with some chicken, and she's very happy. And I hope that lets you know how I feel about the quality of the Factor meals, the fact that I'm getting them from my mom. And when we do get them in my house, my wife takes them to work with her, which, again, if it was just a podcast meal from some weird podcast company, she would have me eat them. But she steals the Factors away. Get started yourself. Go to factormeals.com/downstream50off and use the code downstream50off to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. That's code downstream50off at factormeals.com/downstream50off to get 50% off plus free shipping. factormeals.com/downstream50off. Thank you to Factor for supporting Downstream and all of Relay. All right, let's move on to letters from listeners.
We get letters.
We do. We get letters, and this is one of my favorites. Now, this person has been on the show before. It is an anonymous writer, but they came. They work at Disney, and this made me laugh, so I'm going to share it. After you said on episode 95 that Strange Days was missing from Hulu on Disney Plus, I had to watch Strange Days for a podcast, and I went to Disney Plus and searched.
What is Strange Days?
It's a movie with Ralph Fiennes. It's from the 90s.
I remember now.
From 1995.
Yes.
And I had to watch it on Hulu. I had to download the Hulu app, which I deleted because I can watch it all on Disney Plus now. And it was very mysterious about why it was on Hulu and not on Disney Plus. And this person has the answer. So they say, after you said it was missing, I dug in to see why. It was missing a specific type of artwork that Disney Plus requires, but Hulu does not. These are all serviced by the same content system now. That artwork has finally been created, and Strange Days is on Disney Plus now, though far too late for your use. Sorry. While most of the Hulu subscriptions should be on Disney Plus, there are a few non-technical holdouts that are being actively addressed. But I love this because I think the implication here is that Strange Days is now on Disney Plus because of me, which I love.
Awesome.
Not that great a movie. It's okay. It's an okay movie. It's a weird noir movie. We watched it at the Incomparable. You can check it out. It's interesting. It is of its time. It is in 1995. A lot of cyberpunk, dark future kind of movies were made, and of those, Strange Days is one.
Use the Beatles song? Is it a Beatles song? Strange
yeah,
Days.
No, that's a Doors song, and they do use the Doors.
Doors.
Song. They do use the Doors song in it. But
what is a Doors song? Not a Beatles song.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
there's, okay,
there, well, you may be thinking of Strange Days Indeed, Most Peculiar Moment. That was a John Lennon song, but that's
John
not
Lennon
in the movie.
Song. Oh, okay.
That's not in the movie.
So that's
from
what
Double
I'm
Fantasy
thinking
in 1980. I have lots of trivia in the background. But anyway, Strange Days, it turns out, and I love this. I just love this detail. If somebody hasn't updated the artwork to be used in the CMS that runs Disney and Hulu to include the new image size that is required by Disney Plus, it just doesn't show up. Just hilarious. And then, as the anonymous writer says, some non-technical issues, there's probably contractual, that are being addressed. Because I know that the goal is that you shouldn't ever have to use the Hulu app if you are a
right.
bundled subscriber.
Well, you know, the other thing that happened recently was that Comcast and Disney did their final sell-off agreement. There's a final, like, now Disney's going to pay a few more dollars and less than Comcast wanted, but more than Disney wanted, so they've mediated it out, and it's fine. And finally, Hulu will be completely 1,000%, 100% owned by Disney, everything. And what I'm hoping is that we finally, like, look, I think, and Iger's once again telegraphing, you know, the days of, I think, a standalone Hulu app are going the way of the dodo.
Exactly.
Now, there will be a Disney app that will allow you to just subscribe to Hulu content, which would be great. And that would be sort of like, you know, but what I do hope is that they find a brand new app that is not as bad as I personally think Hulu is better than Disney Plus. I think both apps suck horribly. And I'm no offense to the tech person who might be listening to this podcast, you've been, you know, there's certain things you do well and it works very well and it's fast and that's good, but I'm sorry, it's graphically impossible for every time I watch Disney Plus. My mom on the other hand thinks it's fine.
Yeah,
I have a thing.
I think it's fine too, but
it's so small and tiny, and you can barely find anything, and it's just it's boring. It's Disney. Where is my imaginary magic? Except for just because don't you disagree? Yeah.
It doesn't bother me. I can get to what I want to watch. I mean, there's a utility aspect to it. I'm always surprised at the lack of personalization of the content that happens there. That recommending things to me, Disney, it tends to be very transactional. I have to go find what I want and then just watch it, which is
right.
Not great.
And it's everything is so small and crammed together, and I don't know. The Disney has pioneered making lands. It's like, give me different, literally give me those anyway.
Okay. One more letter. This is from John, who says the new season of Resident Alien and the upcoming new series Revival on Sci-Fi and The Rainmaker on USA will stream on Peacock 1 week after the linear airings. What say you on that strategy? Although the better question might be if USA and Sci-Fi series will stream on Peacock once those channels are officially spun off from NBC Universal. What do you think about the 1 week after linear move that they're making here?
Boy, I think that's dumb. I guess, look, it's what they're doing is because what's to explain to why this is happening is the reason that, you know, at first, what, Sci-Fi and USA are still making original shows that are scripted?
I know,
they
not
are.
That many.
Very
but few.
But they're doing that for one reason only, to fulfill the obligations of their contract agreements with cable operators.
Yes.
They have to have a certain amount of original content, and it has to be exclusive to cable. It's same way, you know, Paramount, Hallmark Plus, by the way, has stuff. But oftentimes, these episodes can be next day. But in this case, they want stuff that's really, like, exclusive, and it's for a week. That's confusing from a marketing angle. It seems like that means that, I guess, that, you know, Peacock will sort of market the show to Peacock people, sort of on Peacock, and sort of hope that people just start watching there. And they don't care if anyone even watches it on, because they don't care about the linear ratings anymore, because the linear ratings suck. But they do care that the cable operators say, oh, look, you can see this. You know, I think this speaks to the fact that cable companies also need to get over what does exclusive mean. It's all sort of silly. I guess it's fine. You know, I think much better is what happens in the UK, where you now have a model where what happens is when BBC or ITV, which is a commercial broadcaster, Channel 4, what they'll do is they'll launch shows, and all episodes will launch on their streaming platforms, which are a premium thing, but they air week to week on their linear platforms, because linear is seen as sort of the lesser thing, and it's not as exclusive. But here we've got all these affiliate deals and compensation and everything, so that's why you get all this messed up stuff.
This feels actually very much like an echo of Fox content being on Hulu, where it is an existing deal, but that I think Fox is happy to do, and Disney is happy to compensate them to do that. And so I look at this and I think, well, this is all part of the plan of doing SpinCo, is that SpinCo is going to go off and do its own thing, and they are, at least in the near term, and this may be true of the cable channels at Warner Brothers Discovery and Max as well, is at least initially there's a financial agreement where it'll stream over on this streaming service and they'll get compensated, but it also allows in the long term the owners of those cable channels to choose a different partner or multiple partners if they really want to. And it's enough, the 1 week, it strikes me as being almost like just saying we're keeping our distance, but I agree it's also a little bit silly. Like,
it's a little bit silly.
People on streaming are just on streaming. You should put it up as soon as it's on.
Next day is the compromise that it's generally avoided.
Sure.
It'd even be better if they just sort of, what they could do is they could just, make it as the same on-demand window and just sort of like, hey, it's available for 3 days after.
Yeah,
or
Jeopardy
for 7 days.
Wheel of Fortune are going to be next day on Hulu. And it's like, that's fine. I get that there are a lot of TV stations who pay money to show Jeopardy every night and Wheel of Fortune every night. And so you say, well, if you want to watch it tonight, you watch it on here, and then otherwise it's on Hulu tomorrow. It's like, okay, fine, I guess. In the end, it's not going to protect anything.
Yeah, it's also, from a marketing thing, it just seems like really confusing. And plus, if some of those things
you're talking about cable and pleasing the cable companies by fulfilling the deal by doing originals, I actually wonder if that's actually the number one motivator of the 1 week wait, is that, well, I wonder if there's either language or some politics that are like, oh, if we just put this straight on streaming, then the cable companies are going to be angry, so we'll give them a week where it's on cable. And I wonder if it's that simple.
It's probably also about advertisers too, and sort of because they'll get more, because 7 days is the Nielsen sort of advertising one, what advertisers pay for. So it could be for that. So
makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. Before we go, we're going to do our TV picks, where we get to say some shows that we are watching that we think you might want to watch too. Joe, do you have a TV pick for me?
Yes, I'm, last time I talked to you about sort of Netflix comedies. Right now, speaking of my favorite streamer, just about Apple TV Plus, I'm right now really getting into two shows that sort of drop around the same time each week. And that's a really weird offbeat sci-fi comedy called Murderbot. It's based, I think, on a book that's very popular.
Series of novellas.
Yeah. And it's absolutely great. It's an android robot who sort of is sort of like very much like Data, who's sort of becoming a little humanish, and it's just got wry wit. I mean, it feels also, by the way, it's Chris and Paul Weitz are behind it, and it feels very much like a movie that's been chopped up into very short episodes. The episodes get sometimes like 23 minutes. It's a little bit, I wish I want more.
I agree.
But it's really well done. And then Owen Wilson, who I'm not always a fan of, but he's fine enough. He's and I'm not into golf, but it's a show about Owen Wilson as a failed old golf prodigy who sort of ends up tutoring a younger golf prodigy with Marc Maron involved in the ride. And it's, you know what? Just watch the first hour and see if it's for you. It's
Stick,
very much
right? Stick.
It's called Stick. It's very much in the extended Ted Lasso shrinking Apple sort of dad TV feel good comedy sort of you know, a little sportsy, a little masculine-y, but sort of, hey, everything's going to be better with the world comedies. You know, Bill Lawrence is not involved with this one, but he might as well be. And it's not the sharpest written comedy in the world. It's going to be predictable, but it's just a fun hang. It's a fun. That's the other thing Apple does well. They do fun hang comedies, and that's what this is.
That's why they work with Bill Lawrence so much, just because he's a master of the fun.
He's the king.
My pick is going to be on Netflix, because I got Netflix back to watch watch Love, Death, and Robots for a forthcoming episode of The Incomparable. But since I've got it for a month, I'm watching other stuff, and I just want to highly praise Department Q. Department Q is a British crime show. It's about a detective. It's got vibes of Slow Horses a little bit, and I would say vibes of maybe something like Broadchurch. The main detective is Matthew Good. He's really great in the part. He is a sort of sad cop who was involved in he was injured in a shooting on the job, and he's dealing with his sort of post-traumatic stress and the fallout of his life kind of falling apart. And he is placed, and this is the Slow Horses part, other than the fact that it's set in Edinburgh, but you know, it's a UK based show. He is put in charge of a new cold case unit, essentially, that is essentially a political stunt to get more funding for the department, for the police department. And he's not really expected to do anything. He's kind of viewed as a screw up. He's given a basement office and no staff. He gradually accumulates a staff of misfits, which is, again, very Slow Horses. And they are trying to solve a very particular cold case that they have start to pull the threads on. And what I love about it, a bunch of really good people in it, including Kelly MacDonald. But Matthew Good is so great. I really like a show where people are smart and good at their jobs. And despite all of the things that are falling apart in Matthew Good's life, in this show, he is a good cop and really knows what he's doing. And there's a guy named Alexei Manvilov who is playing Akram, who is from Syria. He's a Syrian immigrant who, in a classic story, kind of like is working on the computers in the police department, but he's very clearly a former cop who's good at his job too. And like, these misfits are actually have things to contribute, and it's so delightful to watch them as they work the problem and try to solve the crime. So yes, Department Q, really good British crime show with a great performance by Matthew Good as the lead. So
I love me a British crime show. I'm all about the BritBox and Acorn, and yes, Netflix sometimes gets in there as well, and I will definitely add this. Now, does it have a sort of any lighter elements to it, or is it very heavy? And how many DCIs are there?
Because I love there, me a good DCI. There are quite a few DCIs, although most of them are working on other cases. I think it's funny, but it's kind of darkly funny. I think that the lead character, the Matthew Good character, is funny, but he's sort of cutting in his humor. It makes me laugh. I would say also the crime is kind of dark, but I don't think this is like Happy Valley dark. I don't think it's like a super deep, dark, depressing, honestly, I don't even think it's Broadchurch dark. I think the crime is rough, but like, I think that there is I wouldn't say that it's a light, feel good, fun thing, but I think that it's not a slog to watch it. I really enjoy it. So yeah.
All right. I will add this to my
Department Q.
I will add this to my queue.
Added to your queue, Department Q.
And there's no, is there an Avenue Q crossover at all?
I haven't seen any puppets yet, but you never know.
All right.
This brings us to the end of the show. Now, if you're not a Downstream Plus subscriber, you missed us talking about Apple TV not getting any better, CNN having a good night and good luck, and Netflix's great ad migration. So every other episode, more or less, most of the show is available just for supporters. If you want to support us, go to downstream.plus for full versions of every episode, as well as access to the very nice people in the Relay community Discord, bonus shows from Relay, and a whole lot more. And if you would like to be one of those listener letters, we would love to hear from you. Downstream feedback. .com. Love to your mothers. We love to hear from you. You can find me at sixcolors.com. I appear many other podcasts here at Relay and over at The Incomparable. Joe, where can people find you?
I hang out on Blue Sky at TV Mojo with an E at the end. And you can find me in Vulture and my newsletter, Buffering, which is available for free.
It's for free and you should subscribe to it because it's very good.
It's okay.
Well, it's fine. You should subscribe and it's free. It's worth every penny.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of upside there, Joe. I'm not saying it's worth nothing. I'm saying it's worth every penny you pay. It's a great value.
You get what you pay for.
And that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying it's a great value for it's free. Anyway, it's really good. We will be back in a couple of weeks. But until then, thank you for listening to Downstream.
Night, America.
And good luck.